Hello, everyone. This is Renee Rentmeester. I'm the creator and executive producer of the Cooking Without Looking TV show and podcast. And today, if you want to go to Hawaii, this is your lucky day.
Yes.
We have Kyle Lacanse. Kyle, how are you?
Oh, I am just so fine. Thank you, Renee, for having me.
Of course, of course. Well, we met each other through another friend, Hobie Wedler, who
Yes.
was on our show at one point and on our podcast. And so then you contacted us and we spoke to your class. But tell us a little bit about yourself and about your blindness journey.
Sure. So I work at a structure discovery program here in Hawaii. We're part of the Department of Health. So we're part of the state, and our branch is Ho'opono, Services for the Blind branch. I have students from 18 years and older who come to our program to learn blindness skills to help with their independence. And my focus actually is on living skills in the kitchen and in the home so that, we can get everybody out and shopping and coming back to cook for their dinners and their kids and loving cooking again. So, the umbrella of home management is what I teach, and personal and home management. That is actually what my class is entitled, personal and home management. So that covers a lot, right? It covers a lot. And today I know I'm sharing a recipe about cooking, but, it doesn't stop there in my class. Yes, they do learn how to cook, but you know what comes with cooking is cleaning
and
doing laundry, right? Yeah, right. You got to do your laundry because your aprons might get dirty.
That's right. That's right.
Right? And your towels will get dirty. But we have to go shopping in order to do all that too, right? You can't cook without groceries. But it doesn't stop there. We talk about making meals for a large party. That's actually the last thing they do for in my class is cook a meal for 25 people. Now that is not easy, and it takes a lot of time management skills, and your blindness skills have to be really, really in key in order to be able to do that. So,
you know, Kyle, I would think that even with sight, 25 people cooking for 25 people is quite an achievement.
Yes, it is. Amen to that. And it is quite a feat. And when our students are, when they finish that particular project, oh my goodness, they are just flying because they just know that, you know, all the things that accumulated during the time that they were with me from 9 to 12 months. This is a big, you know, hurrah at the end. All the things, like I said, time management and learning how to clean and put something in the oven and just, you know, how many people are you cooking for and how big is your casserole going to have to be, etc. Right? Because that all comes into play. And at that point in time when they're with us, I'm here to kind of like, okay, you tell me what you want to do kind of thing and you go for it. And maybe I guide them a little bit, but you know, fortunately I have two kitchens and the small kitchen is for that person who's making their meal. They don't come into this kitchen, ask me questions anymore. They're on their own for, you know, 2.5 days in order to make this meal. So it's pretty exciting. That's what I do. And I love it. I absolutely love it. I've been with Ho'opono for actually 10 years now, only teaching this class for about 7 years. Prior to that, I was with the Blind Vendors, which is another program that is throughout the nation. But I love what I do. And my blindness, it came about when, when I was, maybe not even my mid, I won't even say how old I am, but anyway, it was like in my mid-30s or so, I started losing my sight through what they call keratoconus, which is part of your cornea. And so I've had several corneal transplants. Unfortunately, some of them didn't work. One did, which actually helps me see through one eye. Not very good. I don't see very good, but But that's okay, because I've learned blindness skills through my program that I teach. But I actually had to go through the program myself. And I don't rely on my sight. I actually am not sighted at all. I'm blind in my right eye. So the very, very little sight that I have in my left eye, I don't rely on it because I can't. You know, that's okay. I mean, I've learned. And exactly what I teach our students is we learn not to rely on our sight, and we learn the blindness skills that we need to be independent, yeah, and confident. So, yeah, that's kind of me in a nutshell.
Okay, we're done. No, I'm just teasing. So tell us, what are some of the skills you teach? Like, give us some tips that you have for cooking.
Okay, sure. I talk about time management a lot because, well, that entails everything. Like if you're going to make, let's say you're making what I'm making today, which is a crumble, right? It could be a dessert. It could be a breakfast thing, right? And you've got several ingredients. Luckily, I don't have very many, but it's only like 6 or 7 ingredients, but you still need to know how much of what and be able to listen to a recipe. So most of my students are very good with listening audibly with their phone, or maybe they are listening to a cassette on an audible tape, or best yet, if they're proficient in their braille, they're just reading the recipe off their piece of paper. So that's first and foremost, knowing what you're going to make, right? And then knowing how much of what you need to buy is another skill. Like,
how do you figure that out? How do you figure that out, Kyle?
Yeah. So if you're making a crumble like I am, and you go to the store and buy 5 pounds of flour, you know, you got to figure out, well, I don't need all 5 pounds. You don't know how much 5 pounds of flour is. It's a whole lot of flour.
It's a lot of flour.
By listening to your recipe, you figure out, today, guess what? I'm using 4 cups of flour. That's a lot of flour, but this thing is pretty big. And how to measure that? How do you measure 4 cups of flour, right? And so our measuring cups on the handle, we brailled out, braille dots with numbers. So 1 cup would just be the number 1 with CUP, you know, after that, like half cup would be 1/2 cup, so et cetera. And so we have in my kitchen, we have all our appliances and not utensils so much, because everyone kind of can feel what a fork is and all that. But if you're measuring, right? If you're measuring, the spoons and the cups would be a lot easier if they have a braille sign on it. And then as far as appliances are concerned, you know, the ovens and the stovetops are in braille. And then our spices, you know, spices are like for cinnamon. You don't have to slate the whole name cinnamon, but you could just do CINN, right? Sure. So it really helps to label the things that you're using in your recipe, and knowing how to measure out would be, in our kitchen, we have 4 cups all together in one, like in one group, so to speak. And so the 1 cup is always going to be on the same ring as the half cup, the 3rd cup, and the 4th cup. So without even them knowing if they don't know Braille yet, they would know that the 1 cup is always going to be the largest. And then the smallest cup is always going to be the 1/4 cup, right? So, and then they learn what a 1/3 is a little bit bigger than a 1/4. And then the 1/2 is just half of 1 cup. So that's the second to the largest. As far as the same thing when you're using with measuring spoons, we have 4 stuck together, not stuck together. They're actually on a ring, and the largest would be a tablespoon, and then a teaspoon, half teaspoon, and a 1/4 teaspoon. So if you keep those all together, you have some kind of comparison. You know, okay, the largest one has to be a cup, So measuring would be one thing, another skill. Okay, so how about knowing, let's talk about the stove. Holy cow. Okay, so how, if you have a stovetop like ours is a glass top. So how do you know that the stove is on? I mean, you know, you got, and how to turn it on, right? So again, we have these, gosh, what do you call them? They're just bumps. They're like a little, they're little sticker.
Heimar.
Yes, exactly. Thank you, Renee. You know what I'm talking about. and you know, you can actually mark your turn knobs of your oven, of your stove. I'm sorry, your stove, in order to know, you know, like where is it maybe really hot to, as opposed to a little cooler, like, you know, a medium high or whatnot. So we use a lot of those type of little tools or tricks in order to, and then you can also turn your oven on, like you have four burners, and which one did I turn on? Well, if you have your hand high above the stovetop, you can kind of sense, okay, is the heat coming in front of me or is it to my left? Yes.
What do you find is the best for people who are blind or visually impaired? Electric or gas or whatever they like the best?
I would say whatever they like to bet the best. Mm-hmm. I mean, unfortunately, our gas stove, we do have a gas stove. I did mention we have two kitchens. Unfortunately, we only have one gas stove, and that's in the small kitchen. And I'm in the large kitchen the most because you know, it's the biggest and we have the most room. But I would say whatever they're able to learn and get comfortable with. I mean, you know, I love gas stoves. I wish we had gas stoves here, but
yeah,
unfortunately, we only have flat tops. But same concept. When you turn it on, you kind of feel where the heat's, you know, if it's in front of you or not. Now, I tell my students, how do you know the heat is, that your pot is spot on onto that element that's on your, you know, that's on the stove? Well, you know, if your pot is spot on, well, guess where the heat's going? It's going in the pot, right? You shouldn't feel any heat. The stove top will be on, the element is on, but if your pot is spot on onto the element, then the heat's going into the pot, on the bottom of the pot. Now, if you are too far to the right, your pot is too far to the right, you are going to start to feel the heat on your left. You're going to start going, whoa, wow, that feels pretty hot. But if you move your pot back to the left, then you're again spot on onto the element. So same thing, if you're feeling it right, like where your front of you are, and you're standing right in front of the element, and the heat is like you're feeling the heat above the pot now, right? But your mm-hmm. pot is a little too far towards the wall away from you. Well, then the heat's going to be right in front of you, right? Directly in front of you. So you just need to adjust so that the heat's going into the pot and not, you know, and then, that your pot is spot on.
Kyle, when you first started cooking after you were losing your sight, did you ever burn yourself?
Sure. You know, it does happen. I think more so when I'm using the oven and I'm not careful. Like I might, try to find the pan that's in the oven and I accidentally touch the edge of the rack that the pan is on, it wasn't hurtful so much that I really really burned myself, but I tend to like wearing gloves that kind of go up further past your wrist,
do you use the oven gloves, Kyle?
But I've recently discovered are these, I think they are the gloves. They're like gloves where they're finger gloves, right? You put your fingers through it and the rubber's on the outside. I found these at Sur La Table, the store in California. They are the best because you can actually, it's not like mittens, because mittens, when you're pulling out a pan out of the oven, it's really, you're like, especially if they're big. My hands are kind of small. So if I'm wearing a big, big mitten, it's going to take me longer to find that edge of the pan, right, to take it out of the oven. Well, these wonderful gloves, because they have the rubber on the outside, but they're made, I think they're knitted, you know, but they have the rubber to protect your hands from getting hot. Yeah. And so, so they fit, they literally fit like a glove, and they are the best because you can actually reach, of course, you're going to reach in the oven to find your pan, but you're, but you can feel the pan because it, you're, because it fits like a glove. You're actually feeling it, you know? So I love those. And I don't, they're silicone, but only on the, I want to say on the part of your hand that
the
you're
palm,
gonna feel for
the palm of your hand.
Yeah, yeah, kind of, and okay. the fingers, of course. Yeah.
Kyle, when you were losing your sight and you started cooking again, were you afraid or how did you feel? How did you start cooking again? How did you get your confidence back up?
Well, you know, I mean, unfortunately, I've been cooking pretty much all my life. I think my first cake that I baked for my mom when I was like 8 or something, I really wanted to bake. And she gave me this hand mixer, but then I walked away while it was on and she walked into the kitchen and it went all over her.
I'm like, okay.
But yeah, so I have been in the kitchen all my life. I've loved to be in the kitchen. So I don't think I was really, I didn't lose my confidence so much. It's just that I was like, okay, well, how am I going to do what I love to do, but differently, you know, and what will help me, right? What will help me still do what I love the best. And so, I just, you know, I don't hope that answers your question. I don't think I never got to the point that losing my sight was really going to hinder what I wanted to do because I was just determined that I'm going to get this done. I don't know how, but I'm going to figure it out. You know,
well, how do you teach your students to like, you must get a student or so who's like afraid to go into the kitchen because they've lost your sight. How do you get them to overcome that fear?
Yeah. So we start small. I start really, really small. Like for anyone who actually comes in the kitchen, whether they've cooked all their life like myself or somebody who may be a teenager right out of high school and their parents have never let them cook before, right? Those type of students, I really start small. Like we might, okay, so maybe they're even fearful of the microwave, right? Just pressing a button and cut out that sort of thing. So we start with eggs, just cracking an egg, putting it in a pan, warming it up, you know, and cooking it till it's done. And so we obviously don't have them make a meal or anything big at first. And then we kind of add to that. Right. And so once I see that their confidence is like, okay, well, I'm still scared of the heat, but maybe it's not so bad. And then, you know, you just kind of build on it until we can get them to make something. Well, before this big, big meal, they actually do a formal meal for 6 people. Oh boy, that really boosts their confidence because then they're like, heck, if I could do this for 6 people, I could do it for 30, right? Or whatever. So it's building confidence, but in really, really baby steps. And it works. It actually works. Yeah.
What do you have a story of a student who was like, you thought they'd never learn how to cook or you had the biggest trouble with them and then they got to be like really good? Do you have a story like that at all?
Yeah, I do. I do have a student. We did have I still keep in contact with her. She's a lovely girl. She just came out of high school and she's known about our program forever. And her mom really wanted her to come in and she was, her disability not only was blindness, but she was autistic also. And because of her autism and her blindness for that matter, her parents were super, super overprotective, right? So, but she loved to be in the kitchen for some reason, and which I thought was a great thing because she just she's had, she has watched her her mom baked throughout her, you know, her younger years. And so when she came to me, she's like, "Oh, Miss Kyle, I'm so glad to be here." And so again, starting with baby steps and just really working with her at her own pace. Just opening a can of, you know, green beans or something for her was, you know, a slow process, just because, you know, she didn't quite have that wrist action or just the dexterity of, you know, turning and holding at the same time, or even drying a dish in the dish rack that was heavier than she's used to. I'm thinking, oh my goodness, did everybody just like, oh, no, please don't, you know, pick that up, we'll do that for you kind of thing, right? Well, we don't do that here. Everybody's Ryan. A team. And when we have a big meal, well, guess what? The whole team of students gathers together. And that's this one student. No. I don't have her sit out. She's in there just trying to learn. And maybe, you know, we help her at first. And then she just builds that confidence. She actually builds the muscle strength. And she was able, by the time she graduated, she was able to open her orange juice bottle in the morning by herself. Never had to ask anybody again, because when she first started, you know, she was asking all the people in our morning meeting, can anyone please open my, you know, orange juice bottle, because of that wrist action. And
sure.
Yeah. And so she actually did really well when she graduated. So I was really happy for her.
Well, Kyle, yeah. I think I need to take your course, because I can't always open an orange juice bottle either.
Well, you know, it was just that little twist, right? You think, oh, that's so hard, but some of those are really hard to open, you know, right?
They are. Yeah. Yeah.
But because of that, anything that had to do with twisting, it was no problem. You know, I got this. She'd open all her stuff when she made her meal. Nothing. I think we invited her parents to her meal, and they were like, oh, Kelly, let me take the dishes to the... No. She did it all. She served everybody. She took the dishes away. She had to serve three different things. You know, she had to pour the coffee. I mean, there's everything she had to do by herself. And her parents are like, huh? You know? Is this the same child that we have at home? And she would go home and she'd say, Mom, can I make this? And so, yeah, it sort of helped the whole family and to, you know, for them to go, okay, well, let's let her do it or whatever. And so that was, yeah, that was so great to see that happen with her. So.
Well, that sounds amazing. Well, Kyle, it's about time. We want to hear about your Mary Berry Crumble, and anyone who's listening, you can go to our website at www.cookingwithoutlookingtv.wordpress.com. And you can find Kyle's recipe. So Kyle, take it away.
Okay, so this is a fun recipe. If you look through the ingredients, it's only like, oh boy, 5-6 things. Flour, butter, sugar, blueberries, any berry actually. And then I do use pie filling for part of it too. So, my favorite spice of all. In anything is cinnamon. I just love cinnamon.
I know.
Yeah, it just makes everything just brighten up. So anyway, so that's like the sixth ingredient. Okay, so you're just going to use a 9x13 pan. And what I usually do is I know there's sprays out there that you can spray with oil and stuff like that. Well, guess what? You know what? When you're making something, especially like a cake of any kind, this is what I was told by somebody before, and it makes so much sense. You're gonna cut the cake, you're gonna put your fork in it, and you're gonna bite it, right? The first thing that hits your tongue is the bottom of the cake, right? So I use butter. It's so much better than oil. I just think it's the best thing in the world to use for oil, not oiling, but you have to generously take some butter and put it on a pan. Yes, but you know what I mean. So that's the first thing you're going to taste. You're not going to taste the cake, because your tongue is going to taste the bottom. So you got to use butter. And that's what I use to to make sure that this cake does not stick on the pan. So you got to generously take some butter. And what I usually do is I take a block of butter and I cut maybe a half an inch off the one end. And I with the actual paper itself too, so that your paper, your fingers are just holding the piece of paper, and think of it as like a little tiny square in your hand, right? And then I just butter the pan methodically. Now, what I mean by that is, in order to get that whole space, a 9 by 13 pan, it's a rectangle, right? You're going to go from one side, and I usually go up and down from starting on the left, go up and down from bottom to the top of the pan, and just keep going till I hit the other side of the pan, to the right side. And then guess what? I go from left to right. So I make sure that everything's buttered correctly. And then I also do the sides, because the cake, any cake can stick to the side too. So you got to remember the sides. Okay. So once you're buttered, your pan is buttered, then, and there's a couple of things you can do the day before, which I did yesterday actually for this recipe. The dry ingredients, which are your flour, sugar, cinnamon, no salt, actually. Believe it or not, this has no salt. So flour, sugar, and cinnamon, you're going to measure that and you're going to put it in one big, big bowl. I put it in a big bowl because guess what? It's a lot of flour. It's 4 cups. Wow, it's a lot, right? Then you add another cup and a half of sugar. That's going to be a, so you don't, you'd rather go big, right? Because when you're mixing all that together, a small bowl, well, wow, it's going to go off the side. So I use the biggest stainless steel bowl that I have. And then I use what they call is a dough cutter. It's like this plastic little, how do you say? It's so bad.
I'm trying to think of what you mean. I know what you mean. My mom had one of those too.
But I love, and Renee, you know what I like to use? I like to use, so there's one, they almost look like a bench scraper thing. I think that's what they call it. It's a tool in
yes,
wood, in
yes, woodshop. Yes, yes.
Yeah, but I don't actually, guess what? I don't like using the ones with the handle. I like the ones that are flexible, and they're just one little piece of
metal.
Plastic.
Oh, you got the plastic one. Okay.
Yeah, I like the plastic ones the best because they're flexible. They bend a little bit. They can go really on the sides of the bowl, and they're great. So, and they're cheap. And I can't find them anywhere, but I have some that I bought when I was, you know, living in California that I've kept forever. And anywhere I go to a cooking store, we don't have very many here in Hawaii, unfortunately, because all of them, for whatever reason, we only have one or two really good ones. So,
wow.
Yeah, so anytime I'm in California, that's the first store I try to go to. And then when I find something plastic like that, which is what I call it a dough cutter, because it cuts the butter into the dough. That's what I buy. And they could be less than $5 or even $3.50 or something like that. They're really cheap. So anyway, okay. So now you've got, you measure your three ingredients in your bowl, which is your flour, sugar, and your cinnamon. Now, when you're measuring flour, what I usually do is I don't, like, I have this big bin of flour, so I don't actually just dip my flour cup into the flour thing, into the big bin. I actually take a spoon and actually scoop some flour into the spoon, and then put that into the 1 cup measuring cup. It actually, there is a reason, I can't remember the reason, but there's a reason for you to measure flour that way. It shouldn't be packed down solid. It should be like fluffy. So you measure that, and then I just take my forefinger and I go along the top side of the cup so that it's level. And then any excess flour, it goes right back into the bin, right? I do this over the bin, not over an empty counter or anything. So I don't have to clean up, right? So, and then I do the same for the sugar. As far as the cinnamon, if you're lucky enough that your teaspoon will fit into the, you know, your cinnamon spice bottle, that's best. But if not, then just, all I do is I pour out some cinnamon into a small bowl, and then I scoop from my teaspoon out of that, and then you can actually funnel back the excess cinnamon back into your spice bottle, so long that your bowl is clean, right? Anyway, okay, so now you've got your dry ingredients into one big bowl. The other thing that I did yesterday was I cut the butter into small pieces. So it does ask for 4 cubes. Now, 3 cubes are going to go into the actual body of the crumb of the cake. And the last cube of butter is actually going to be cut up just the same, but it's going to go on the very top of the crumble. So how to cut your butter, because now it's in a cube, right? If you're like me, I'm a warm person, meaning that my hands are really kind of hot. So even if I'm in the AC right now, but I can feel my hands are pretty warm. So I melt butter like crazy. So I have to get my butter cold as can be, even if it's in the freezer. You don't have to, because then your butter is going to be super hard and you have to cut really, really, you know, you have to put some muscle power into it. But I don't want it soft, because when you're trying to cut butter into small, tiny pieces, you do want it solid and cold. Okay, so that's my one tip about cutting butter. And so all I do is I take the butter cube. I do take off the paper, but I still I take the paper off. So it's almost like unwrapping a present, right? So the paper's still going to be on my surface. The butter cube's going to be standing right on, it's going to be right there on top. I don't even take it off of the paper. I actually leave it on the paper, and then I cut the cube vertically. So then now it's in two big pieces. Right. And then I cut it in half. I cut the two big pieces in half again. So now I have 4 big pieces. And then I cut down the side. So now you have cubes of butter, right? And then so 3 of those I'm going to keep together, and I'm going to put it back in the fridge, right? Just so that my butter is nice and cold. And then the 4th one, I cut it, same thing, but then I separate it. So I make sure that the 4th cut butter is not with the 3 others. Okay, so now I've got my bowl of all the flour, sugar, and cinnamon. And now I'm going to take my butter out of the fridge, right? Nice and cold. And I'm going to start putting the butter into the flour. You don't have to do it all at once, because that's a whole lot of butter to put all at once. So I just do cube at one cube of butter at a time. Does that make sense? 1 cube of butter at a time. And I'm using now my dough cutter. And that's why they call it a dough cutter. Now you're making a dough and you're cutting in the butter. So the motion is, you're just going to hold the dough cutter in your hand and you're going to press down. You're going to actually, you know, throw those little pieces of butter inside of the flour and all that mixture. And then all of a sudden, guess what? After you start cutting the butter into the flour mixture, it's going to come up like crumbly. Like if anyone ever made a pie, it's kind of like a pie dough. You can actually pick it up with your fingers and feel a little tiny pieces of butter, and that's absolutely fine. You don't want big chunks of butter still in there. You just want them all kind of like covered with flour and mixed in there with the flour mixture. Okay, so now I've got my mixture of butter and flour together. The next thing I'm going to do, it does say to use some pie filling. You can make the pie filling from scratch if you want. It's extra work. But if you want to go that route, that's absolutely fine. Or you just go to the store and buy a can of pie filling. Because it's blueberry, I picked for the fruit, I'm using blueberry pie filling. And so I just take that can and I try to empty it out as much as I can. I take everything out of there and I put it actually in a bowl, because I think it's a lot easier. Because what you're going to do is you're going to take some of your flour mixture, I'll call it the flour butter mixture, and you're going to lay a layer of it down on your prepared baking pan, right? So what I mean by that is you're just going to, I think it's easiest with your clean hands. I mean, you could use a spoon, but it's a lot, It's harder to feel that way. I just use my bare hands, clean hands, right?
Sure,
so what
sure.
I'm yeah so what I'm doing is I'm just putting my hand in the flour mixture, and I'm trying to make a layer on the bottom of my baking pan as even as you can. You're not using the whole bowl of flour mixture at this time. You're just doing a small little layer, and you could feel around the pan if you made sure that you covered. You want to cover the whole pan with some of the flour mixture, okay? There shouldn't be any holes. We call those pukas here in Hawaii. You don't want any pukas anywhere on your when you're feeling around on the bottom of your flour mixture in that's inside the pan, because you just want that's your base of this cake, right? So you and that's the first thing you're going to bite into, right? When you bite into it, okay? So a short layer of flour mixture, butter mixture on the bottom of the pan. Now you're going to take your pie filling. Now, what I find that's easiest so that so how do you spread this thing that's kind of gelatin-ish and with fruit in it, and it's like this big blob of stuff, right? So what I do is I just take those little scoopers, like you would scoop cookie dough onto a cookie sheet in order to make cookies.
Sure.
Yeah, so I use those because guess what? They're pre-measured. If you just try to make them as even as you can, there's no science about this. You just scoop them. Again, now I'm going to say, you have to do this methodically, because if you start scooping it and only put it in the pan in one area, you're going to get this big blob of pie filling on one side of your pan. So you're going to start with one side of the pan, pick any side. I pick the left side because I'm right-handed. So I have my scooper. And my scooper now has a little bit of the pie filling in it, or it's full. I'm talking about really small scoops. These are the kind that you would use for like baking cookies, right? Not the big scoops that you would scoop out rice or ice cream out of. These are the smaller ones. So I start one side of the pan, and I scoop these. I scoop a filling onto my flour mixture now, right? And then I just feel going down the pan, maybe four down, right? Four scoops down. And I'm spreading them out as best I can. You're just going to go scoop. You're going to scoop it onto your flour mixture. And then with your left, my left forefinger, I can actually feel, oh, okay, that's where I scooped it. Well, then I can move my finger to a dry area of my flour mixture. And then I do the next scoop. So I only do like four or three going from the top of the pan down, and then I go again. Now I'm scooping all the way across the pan, if that makes sense, horizontally. So I'm going, it's like putting cookies down on a cookie sheet. I'm going to go three down and four across, and that way it just gets spread as evenly as possible throughout your whole crumble. You could take a butter knife if you want later on and try to spread it if you want, or just I just actually take my fingers and try to spread it a little bit. You know, this pie filling is not going to spread very much, but so long it's not like one big glob in one big area of your crumble, you want it spread out as much as you can. Okay, so now you're going to take a little bit more of your flour mixture, put it on top of that, right? Now you've got, so it's almost like layering, like you're doing a lasagna. You're going to do flour mixture, then you're going to do your pie filling, then you're going to do some more flour mixture, and then on top of that, guess what? Come the blueberries. Now, the blueberries, I did say in the recipe to go out and buy, you can buy fresh blueberries if you have them. Those small packages are just perfect because you're only going to use about a cup. If you're going to use frozen berries, which I do because right now it's not in season, and it's hard to find here in Hawaii. So if you're going to use frozen, you don't want the berries to fall down to the bottom of your pan because they will sink. Frozen will sink. So you want to just dust the berries in flour. And how do you do that? You just put some flour in a bowl, a medium-sized bowl, throw the blueberries in there, and then mix it around a little bit. You don't want to take the blueberries out very early out of the freezer. You want to just leave them in there until you're ready to put them onto your crumble. Okay, and then just have fun with it. What I do is I just scoop it in my hand, and I try to I try to go from one side of the pan to the other side, so all the blueberries are not sitting on one side. You want them spread out as best you can. And then on the very, very top of this crumble is the whatever you have left over in your bowl of flour mixture. That's going to go on the very, very top. And that very, very last cube of butter that you cut up long time ago, well, guess what? Those tiny, tiny little pieces, again, just like your blueberries, you're going to sprinkle them around throughout the whole 9x13 pan.
And then then do you put it in the oven?
Yes. Then you just put it in the oven. And you should have preheated your oven long time ago to 350. And then it's an easy bake of 1 hour, right? And here we have timers that are like those little dial timers that if you dial it all the way around, it goes no more, it's 1 hour. Or you can use Siri on your phone. We have talking timers too. That we can use. But most students just ask Siri, hey, you know, set my timer for 1 hour, please. And then that's it. You leave it in there 1 hour. And then to test it, you know, it's not like putting in a toothpick in a cake and feel it's a crumble. So it will feel crummy when your toothpick comes out. But so here's the best thing to do. When you take it out of the oven after an hour, if your crumb on the top, the flour mixture feels really firm, then you know it's done. And you can smell it, by golly, you can smell it.
I can smell it over here, Kyle.
What's
so, that sounds so amazing, Kyle. I just want to run out and get some blueberry pie filling and make it myself. So,
Renee, I wish you were here.
So tell us if anyone wants to reach out to you, how do they reach out to you, Kyle?
Oh, okay, yeah, they can always reach out to me. Amen to that. So, I'm in Hawaii, so you can reach out to me. Excuse me, I'm just drinking some water. I could be reached at 808-954-1391.
That's great, Kyle. And do you have an email that people can use, or you prefer just that they call you?
Oh, yeah, sure. You can email me. Absolutely. So my email address is K Lakanse. I'll spell it all out for you. So it's KLACONSAY at D as in dog, H as in Harry, S as in Sam, dot Hawaii, all spelled out, HAWAII.gov. Sorry, I was going to say org, but it's gov, G-O-V, as in Victor. Yeah, so klakanse at dhs.hawaii.gov.
Well, thank you so much, Kyle.
Oh, thanks, Renee.
This sounds so good. I can't wait. I'm going to try it. I really am. And thank you for being here. And again, to listeners, if you want Kyle's recipe for the Mary Berry Crumble, you can go to our website at www.cookingwithoutlookingtv.wordpress.com. And Kyle, thank you so much for being with us today.
And thank you.
Thank you for helping us change the way we see blindness. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays, everyone. Thank you, Renee.
You're welcome.